Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, I want to welcome back to the show entrepreneur, author, researcher, Charlie Robinson. Charlie's experienced firsthand the corruption from the mortgage and real estate industry, and he's here tonight to talk about some more corruption that we're facing every day. How you doing tonight, Charlie?
I'm good. I'm sorry to hear about your demonetization. It makes me want to throw up when I hear that, but hopefully you know that you're not alone. Unfortunately, right, everybody's getting dragged down.
Yeah, the more people I talk to, the more the less alone I feel in this, because it's hitting everybody. Well, before we get into that, you know, it's been a few weeks since you've been on. Just give everybody a little bit of your brief bit about your background and what kind of opened your eyes to, the shitty world we live in and what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wrote a book called The Octopus of Global Control. It came out in August of 2017. The book came about from an event 10 years earlier when I read John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It opened my eyes to this global scam where they have the World Bank and the IMF working in tandem to put third world countries into debt slavery by offering them big loans and then on projects that were never going to pencil out and then calling in the loan. And when the countries couldn't pay it, then they basically went to them and said, well, we can work out a deal, you know, like a loan shark does, and you can vote our way in a UN resolution, or you can privatize your fishing industry, or you can do something like that that they don't want to do. So I'm reading this book about this big global scam of like loaning to own, you know, and realizing that at that time in 2007, working in real estate in Las Vegas, I was like, oh my God, I'm seeing this, but on a smaller scale, just like a micro scale, where the banks and the mortgage companies were extending loans to people that they knew weren't going to be able to qualify. And then, you know, they had adjustable rate mortgages, or just the market itself was going to take a turn. And then when they people defaulted, the banks then took back these tangible assets like houses. And so they would loan fake money money that they created out of thin air, if you understand how the banking system works, loan it out to people. And then when the loans blew up on them, they would take back a tangible asset like a house. And it occurred to me that this was happening. I was sort of a pawn in this. I didn't realize it. At that time, I would say I was half awake, right? Like I was awake to 9/11. I was awake to false flags. I was awake to, the scumbags that are running our governments around the world. But I didn't understand the banking scam as well. I didn't understand that they do the same thing. Just don't, you know, if a local bank can do that to a local homeowner, why wouldn't the World Bank do that to a country? You know, they're just bigger players. And so I'm reading this book. It's opening my eyes. I'm starting to understand it. And then everything comes crashing down right after that. So that's how I kind of got into it. And then years later, just wondering, probably like you did at some point, wondering like, okay, what can I do? What's my responsibility in waking people up to it? Am I going to do a podcast? Am I going to do a documentary? Am I going to, you know, can I write a book? Okay, I can write a book. So I had an idea in my head, and the concept of it was to tell the story of the different tentacles of control, but also then fill in the blanks with quotes from over 500 different people that had some sort of role or witnessed some of the most important events in our recent history. So you've got guys like Rockefellers and Rothschilds quoted in there, Clintons and Bushes, but also Bill Hicks and Joe Rogan and George Carlin and funny guys like that. So whoever had an interesting take on a certain situation, I would put that in there to give the story a little bit more context to kind of explain it. And part of that came from, you know, just doing what all of us have done, which is bringing up 9/11 at an inappropriate time and watching everyone in the conversation kind of turn on you. And you realized you want to say to them, well, like, you, okay, don't take my word for this. What if you heard David Rockefeller talking about how he wanted to put together a new world order, and he was thanking the media for keeping their mouth shut for decades, and would it change your mind? Would you think that maybe this there's something to this, you know, the whole New World Order concept. A lot of people just kind of roll their eyes and just go, give me a break, you know, but it's a real thing. And by the way, did you know that George H.W. Bush mentioned it over 200 times during his 4 years in office? Did you know that Tony Blair's talked about it? Bill Clinton's talked about it. Bono's talked about it. You know, all these people, all the leaders have talked about the New World. Would it make more sense? Would you think I'm less of a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic and maybe onto something if you could see that all of these people, all these powerful people are talking about the same thing? And the answer is, yeah, that would make a huge difference. Like that would, it would be a lot more tangible to someone. So that was, that's sort of the format of the book, was to talk about it, you know, give my take on it, but then fill in the blanks with the quotes from the people that were involved. So that's how I got started on it. Now here I am, you know, 2 years in after the book. I've got another book that's about to come out with Jeff Berwick, who is the creator of Anarchapulco, the anarchist convention in Mexico, and also the host of the Anarchast podcast. So that'll be coming out pretty soon, and that's a lot of fun. But you know, I've been lately, I've just been frustrated watching the things that we've talked about, the things that we've said were coming in the social media world. We said that the censorship was coming, it was going to get ramped up, and sure enough it did. And it's been, you know, on the one hand a bit coordinated, you know, you could tell there's certain topics, but on the other it also kind of seems a little bit haphazard, like just randomly taking people down, like Black Pigeon Speaks, and then putting his channel back up 12 hours later after they got pressured from all his followers on Twitter. So what I've learned is that, and also the Carlos Massa thing that he, you know, where he went after Steven Crowder, and that sort of started this whole, you know, Vox adpocalypse on YouTube and everything. But then when it wasn't enough for him, then Massa stuck all his people, you know, had them go after YouTube, and then YouTube changed their mind. So what I've learned from all of this is that if you make a big enough, if you make enough noise and pressure YouTube enough, they'll change their minds, because they're not married to these policies very, very much. They tend to just kind of ignore you if you're a little guy. I woke up one day and one of my videos, an interview that I did with Jim Fetzer was gone, no surprise. Monday morning, I woke up and my Facebook, I was put in Facebook jail for 30 days over a post from almost 2 years ago. Both, you know, what do they have in common? They both had to do with a certain school shooting that happened in, or didn't happen, in Connecticut. So, you know, that's the theme. You talk about something like that, and it, you know, it makes me think, like, if you remember, they were saying they wanted to take care of, like, Holocaust deniers, people that question tragedies and
false flags
and flat earth. And that made me laugh, because I was thinking, you know, if flat earth is so out there and so laughable and so stupid and all those things, then why do you have to censor it? You know, like to me, that makes it maybe more real than anything, is the fact that they're going out. They don't want people to know that. So they don't want people to know about the school shootings, and they don't want them to question that. And of course that's a gigantic concern. And one of my thoughts is that they're clearing people out. They're clearing the alternative voices out now in advance of something coming, you know, maybe something, another false flag, something that, you know, if a false flag happens, you go on YouTube, you go on Twitter or Facebook, and all the alternative media is quick to point out all the flaws in it. Well, if you're going to pull a massive false flag, what would you do? You would make sure that all of those voices that would out you are silenced. And that seems to be what's happening. So it makes me think that maybe there's something coming up.
I agree. I think there is something big coming up, but I think it's much larger than just a false flag, because it's much larger than just YouTube, the censorship.
Yeah.
I mean, part of what I do here is I scour through stories all over the world about Earth changes, planetary changes, mm-hmm. unusual things that are happening around the world. And guess what? I'm having so much trouble finding these stories now. It's not just YouTube. It's any alternative media. Any media that's just trying to get to the bottom of anything truthful nowadays.
Yeah.
It's just all they want you to do is, you know, be a brain drain zombie, watch sports, you know, eat the crap food and be entertained by whatever crappy TV shows and music they're going to put out there nowadays.
Yeah.
It's getting very discouraging because it's so huge and it's hard to, you know, hard to see where we're going to go with this.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with you. Isn't that funny that you have to, I mean, you talk about alternative events and things like that, but you, like you said, you talk about earth changes a lot. So why would they have it? Why would they want to silence you? Why you?
Right. Unless most of those were news reports that they demonetized as well. And mm-hmm. It's just reporting what's going on around the world. You know, it's not anything really fringe or conspiratorial in those types of videos.
No, exactly. And that to me was a bit of a surprise. So I know why they're doing it. Obviously they're trying to just make it hard on everybody. And I know who's doing it, but, the like you said, you think there's a much bigger plan. It's silencing, you know, it used to be that it was like silencing anybody that talked about Sandy Hook, right? Or silencing anybody that talked about, I don't know, the flat earth. But now it seems to be anybody that's anti-vaccine, anybody that's anti-war, anybody that's anti-mainstream media, anybody that's anti-corruption, anybody that's pointing out the obvious inconsistencies with stories that come out from the mainstream media and having to do with politicians and the lies. I mean, it's like they invented the internet, they put it out there, and the genie's out of the bottle, and they're just like panic now, like, oh God, this has gone too far. Like we were, DARPA puts it out there thinking this is going to be the greatest disinformation tool ever. And it is, but it's also the greatest information tool as well. So it depends on who's doing the digging, who's pulling out the information. So yeah, I just think it's funny that, you know, they validated the alternative media and they've legitimized them by banning them. What they're saying to everybody else is that these people are a problem. What they're saying is important and we don't want you to hear it. So it's frustrating to be in the alternative media. I don't have videos monetized like you. I mean, I don't have very many videos out, but I don't have them monetized like you. So my income isn't directly tied to that. But for the people that are, it's devastating. But the good news of it is that they wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't, if we weren't having an effect on them. They're terrified of the information that's coming out. And they call it fake news. It's fake news, fake news. It's not fake news. It's the truth. It's true news. And they know that.
It's just news.
It's just news. It's like, you know, remember how news used to be when you went looking for it? Yeah, before the CIA got involved. So what they're doing now is they're just showing the alternative media that they're right over the target, because when you take the most flack when you're right over the target, and they are bringing it because they're terrified. I mean, it is like, if they don't do this now to silence the alternative media before the 2020 election, before the run-up to it, before, you know, or before this big potential event that's coming up, or maybe all of those, it may be past the point of no return for them. They may not have another chance to do it. So we saw this coming. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter are all being pressured by the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council is a think tank that is made up of and financed by big oil, big pharma, and the military industrial complex. So what a surprise. If you talk about anti-vaccines, they're not into that. If you talk about anti-war, they're not into that either. So they're funding the Atlantic Council and groups like the German Marshall Fund and Poynter Institute and NewsGuard and all these either think tanks or new truth checkers, you know, fact checkers, and all these organizations that are loaded to the top with ex-CIA and NSA agents. I mean, you just take one look at their board of directors and you're like, yeah, that's not the company that you want to be in charge of the truth. It's led by Michael Hayden, who's the head of the CIA and NSA. Like, could you pick a worse person to run NewsGuard than that? But this is who's doing it. So it's coming down, you know, Google, Facebook, Twitter, they don't like to be the bad guys. But now, because they've brought in these think tanks, they're able to say, well, listen, we've outsourced it to this group and they're doing the fact checking, or we've brought in all these facts, so they can kind of distance themselves and say, well, it's really not us. It's our fact checkers that are telling us that we have to get rid of you because you're fake news and everything. Well, who are the fact checkers? Well, the fact checkers are coming from groups that are tied to the Anti-Defamation League, which is a total hate group, Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, all these groups that are out there pretending to be, you know, fighting hate while they're running a protection racket for everybody else. It's just it's embarrassing. I wish more people were able to see through this. Maybe they are. I mean, I think the people that watch your show or read my book, or they understand this. They can see through this nonsense. But, you know, for the people that just take headline news at its word and don't dig much deeper than that, then they have a much different version of the world. And they probably think that the people that are getting deplatformed right now are just Alex Jones's. And if they don't agree with what Alex Jones has to say, and really, you know, even the alternative media community doesn't agree with what Alex Jones has to say, but still, we respect his right to say it. You know, they say, well, they're just deplatforming guys like that that are Holocaust deniers. Well, that's not the case at all. They're deplatforming all sorts of people that are talking about things that have nothing to do with that. So it's scary. And you know, YouTube's slitting their own throat, but the reason they're doing it is because they're being told to do it, and no doubt their handlers are, you know, they're the financial backers that put them in those places, the hedge funds and the investment groups are loaded up with CIA, NSA, and FBI agents, high-ranking ones too. So, I mean, it's the money that these companies raise comes with strings attached, and they're getting the strings pulled right now.
Now, you mentioned the 2020 election. Now, the way I feel about it, let me start by saying, of course, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I don't trust any president.
Neither do I.
I haven't as long as I've been alive. I think they're all puppets, just my personal belief. Yeah. Now, just a theory of mine is that they used Trump this whole time to kind of push the agenda to possibly get everyone to swing major left towards the 2020 election. So that way they can push their more out there agendas, their more leftist crazy agendas. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't trust Trump. I mean, he's doing some things that I've never seen before, but it could just be part of the plan. What do you think's going to happen? What do you think's going on?
Well, first of all, I agree with you that they're all puppets, and I agree with you that he's done things that make me, well, I do, I'll tell you what I do like about Trump, and it's not much, but I do like that he makes the media crazy, right? And he makes other establishment politicians nuts, right? He just goes, he's a bull in the China shop, and he's just disruptive and rude, and he's a jerk. I mean, he's a jerky guy, but I like it when he's doing it to CNN. You know, like I like it when he's calling them fake news, because for once in their lives, they had to sit back and sort of accept that they just got called out because they know they're fake news, and Jim Acosta and all these guys. It's just like a cast of clowns there. And for all the media, I'm not just necessarily saying CNN's the only one. Rachel Maddow spent 2.5 years chasing ghosts, you know, and then when it all happened, she said, oh, it's there. I just can't tell you about it. You're like, give me a break. Like, it's just, you know, negative behavior is positively reinforced by the fact that they keep these people going on and on and on. She still has a job. If she had a job in any other industry and she was that wrong about something, she would be out on her ass looking for a job. But that's not the world we live in with the mainstream media. So for 2020, what's coming? I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I wouldn't be surprised if Trump did the same thing that all presidents do when they're getting ready for their next term, and that is kickstart a war somewhere else. Except the problem is I can't think of a war he could start that would have the American people's support, really, unless he invaded Israel, maybe. But other than that, I mean, I don't know that Iran certainly won't do it. Venezuela, he has no support for that. That's turning into a total, you know, the CIA and Bolton and Elliot Abrams backed Guaido puppet has turned out to be just a complete failure. So I don't know. I don't know what the 2020 elections have in store. But if, you know, but I'm sure we're going to see this. We're going to see some of the same patterns. We're going to see Bernie Sanders get buried by the media, just totally ignored like they did to Ron Paul. Do you remember when Ron Paul ran? I forget what year it was. It might have been 2004. And they would have like, he was like fourth place. And they'd say, this guy came in first, this guy came in second, this guy came in third, and this guy came in fifth. And you're like, number four? Where's number four? It's Ron Paul. They like pretend like he didn't exist. So they're doing that with Bernie, and they're doing that. They're going to be doing that with Tulsi Gabbard, because both of them, well, at least Tulsi Gabbard is anti-war. And so they can't have that. And let's be honest, you know, MSNBC, even though they're, you know, left-leaning and should like somebody like Tulsi Gabbard, they are also owned by General Electric, who is a major arms manufacturer too. So they have a vested interest in being at war. So a candidate that's anti-war is not going to work for them. So MSNBC will give Tulsi Gabbard the Ron Paul treatment this year, I would imagine. And then we're going to have a cast of total buffoons, from Joe Biden to Beto. I mean, everyone is talking about Beto's this, he's that. He lost to Ted Cruz. I mean, the end. How do you lose to Ted Cruz? You know, so it's like, oh, he's the Beto, man. You got to watch out for him. He's sneaky good. He's going to be the future. He didn't even beat Ted Cruz in Texas. He's not doing anything. So stop this. He's the future. I watch these campaigns. I watch these candidates that come out of nowhere, and Beto jumps up on the table and he's got his jeans on. He's got, you know, his dog and his pickup truck and that Vanity Fair cover and all that. I just look at that and I just go, what a bunch of crap. What a staged nonsense.
It's all a show.
It's all theater. It's just none of it is real. And the people that get super excited about it and go out and rally and go to show up to the events and everything, like, I mean, good for you. Do what you want to do. But like, I wouldn't choose to do that. I wouldn't choose to use my, you know, the limited time we have on this planet to go support some politician who you have no idea who is really controlling him, but you can assume that it's somebody that doesn't have your best interest in mind. So you're going to go give him money or give him support for all that? I mean, get out of here. It's crazy. So I'm not on the red team. I'm not on the blue team. I see some things that Trump does that are reprehensible and embarrassing. I was in London when he was there. And we asked every taxi we got into, we asked them the same thing. Hey, what do you think about Trump? And what was interesting was that the opinion of him in London, just from taxi drivers, not a real detailed survey, was split. The older people didn't care for him. They thought he was disrespectful. And the younger people liked him. They thought he said what needed to be said. So it was really interesting to hear that. So, you know, I hear these numbers about Trump doing a campaign event where it holds 15,000, but 30,000 want to get in. I don't know if that's true. I remember the Hillary campaign where they were having it in a warehouse and they made it look like there were actually people there, but they had the buses blocking in just a fraction of the corner. And then as the camera that pulled to the way back saw the whole place was totally empty. So who knows about these, you know, about turnout numbers and all that. I just know I can't handle 9 months of political advertising campaigns on TV. I think I'll throw myself off my roof. I just don't know if I can do it this year or next year or both years. I mean,
that's why, I mean, I can't, I won't, you know, participate in any of the political fiasco. I'm not going to be watching any of the debates because I know it's all a show to begin with. And I'm still wondering what happened to all these sealed indictments that we're supposed to see, these mass arrests and the cabal being taken down before 2020. I mean, that never happened. You know, this community was all about Trump doing that, and there were, you know, all these leaks coming out saying it's going to happen, and it never happened. And, you know, that's part of what made me lose faith, but not like I had that much in him to begin with.
Right.
But that's another thing that we're not seeing any justice being served for these scumbag psychopaths.
Yeah, and I remember when, I think I might have an answer for why Trump hasn't been able to do all this stuff. It's the same answer. It's the same reason why Obama promised one thing and then did the exact opposite. If you remember when George W. Bush left on his final day and Obama came in for his first day. There's a weird thing that they do where they both go into the White House and talk and do something. And then they both come out about 3 or 4 hours later and they do their little speech. When Obama came out of that meeting, he looked like he had seen a ghost. I mean, he looked terrified. And Trump had that same look on his face when he came out of his meeting with Obama. Of course, they didn't care for each other. And it leads me back to that that Bill Hicks joke about how when the new president is inaugurated, they take him into a downstairs in the White House into a private dark room. They pull down the projector panel and they play a clip of the Kennedy assassination from an angle that they've never seen before, and then jokingly say, so are we clear that, you know, you're going to do what we need you to do? Like, yep, you just tell me what to do. So, I mean, that was obviously a joke, but it was probably based in some truth. There's something that happens in those meetings where the new guy gets told what's what, and it's never good because the look on their face looks like they realize they have made a serious vocational error in becoming the president. And so with Trump, my assumption is that maybe, you know, when he said to Hillary Clinton, you'd be in jail, you know, and maybe he meant that. Maybe when he said he was going to put her in prison, he meant every word of it. I don't know. But somewhere along the way, somebody explains to him, you know, that's not going to be happening. Because if you do that, we will kill your entire family. The end. And that's about the extent of the conversation, how lengthy it needs to be. And these guys get on board really fast with the program because it's all fun and games and theoretical when you're on the campaign trail. But once you're actually the president and they're telling you things like, we're not kidding, we will murder your entire family and make it look like you did it. So then you come to the realization that, okay, well, I can only fight on some battles if I want to stay alive, and I have to pick and choose those wisely. So I'm sure that's what's happened. I'm sure he's allowed to go after and fix some of the wrongs of in society, but the big ones, you know, like I'm going to go shut down the Federal Reserve, he'd be dead in 24 hours, and he knows it.
Well, I mean, you know, that just goes back to the ones that are really in control are so untouchable. And so out of the spotlight, we don't know who they are. We probably will never know who they are. And they have so much power and control over everything that how could we ever make a difference or do anything to touch them when our own president is terrified of what could possibly happen if he tries to make a change in our world? Yeah. You know, we're run by complete psychopaths and, you know, that's the world we live in.
Yeah, and that's something that I've tried to get across to as many people as I can, is that there's a tendency to assume or project the decent human being that you are onto everybody else and think, well, I wouldn't do that, therefore he wouldn't do that. Well, that's a huge mistake because, you know, if you've ever interacted with people that are psychopathic, you will discover that they are willing to cross lines that you would never dream of crossing, and they do it with ease. And so, you know, to look at your government or look at your media or look at the military leaders and say, they wouldn't do it. They're not going to drone strike a wedding party. Oh, you wouldn't drone strike a wedding party, but Barack Obama had zero problem doing it. Whether that was because he feared for his life and was just doing what he was told, or whether he genuinely enjoyed it because he's a psychopath and does not have the ability for empathy. So, you know, yeah, you're right. We're run by literally crazy people. And what that does is it makes sane people that expose that look crazy, which is really frustrating. But then it also makes sane people think, you know, like you were saying, like, what's the point? You know, what am I going to do? What am I really going to do? Okay, fine. Let's say I get the president. Let's say we get Hillary Clinton dragged out in handcuffs and thrown in prison. That'd be awesome. But now what? There's still people eight levels above her pulling the strings, that so nothing's changing. You're just getting a bit of satisfaction and revenge from something like that, but the system won't change, because if anything, now real criminals have looked at the Clinton Foundation and said, okay, I saw what they did here that was great crime, and I saw what they did that got them in trouble, and therefore I'm going to make those changes and not do that in the future. So in some cases, you know, you pull down the Clinton Foundation and lock up all those people, which you should do. What you're going to do is expose the flaws in their crime, and the next ex-president, husband and wife, psychopath team will just make sure that they don't step into the same traps that arrogant Hillary Clinton did. So I don't know. I don't know.
Cut off one hand, another one grows in its damn place.
Yeah. Yeah. With a pantsuit on it, like old Hillary. But, you know, I don't have a ton of hope for us from the election standpoint, but I do feel like a lot of people are waking up to, the reality that there's something wrong. And maybe that's Trump, you know, maybe the Democrats, you know, when Obama was in office, he could do no wrong, right? When Trump came into office, he can do no right as far as the left is concerned. But that's how it always is. Because I remember when George W. Bush was in office, the Democrats were screaming at him and doing the most despicable things. And then when Obama got in office, the Republicans did that. And the Democrats were like, how dare you do that despicable thing that we were just doing, you know, and now they're back to doing it again to Trump. So it's just total hypocrisy on both sides. I used to think, mistakenly, but I used to think that the Republicans were like the stuffy old white guys that were really wealthy and really wanted war and didn't give a damn about the environment and were kind of cold and had the mentality of like, you know, you look out for yourself. I can't worry about you. So that was how I thought the Republicans were, and that the Democrats were more like, no, we gotta include everybody, and we don't want all these wars, and we gotta help education, we gotta take care of the sick. And what I've come to discover is that that's total bullshit. They're all like the Republic. They're all rich, white, psychopathic guys that want control. They don't give a damn about the borders. They don't give a damn about sick people. They don't care about education. They say they do, but you just look at all of the legislation that's happened over the last 30 years, and it's, you know, that is their public position is that they care. Their private position is they don't give a shit about these institutions, and schools, infrastructure. Infrastructure doesn't get you reelected. You know, so you're not going to get a nice, you know, high speed rail project going across the United States like they've had in Japan for the last three decades. So you get stupid decisions. And part of this election process that drives me insane is that because they're so focused on getting reelected at the expense of everything else, that they make really short-sighted decisions, and they just like they're not worried about the debt because they're not going to be around to pay it back. You know, they know they don't have to worry about that. They can promise things in the short term that are going to blow up 10 years from now because they probably won't be here in Congress to have to deal with it. So we get bad decisions made by bad people. And let's face it, what's the personality type that wants to go into politics? Usually psychopathic, somebody that wants to boss other people around, tell other people what to do. It's the same mentality that wants to be a cop. They just want to go around, you know, telling everybody what to do and just, you know, have that authority. They get off on the authority. So you're automatically at a disadvantage when you get politicians, because the people that are actually good people or running, you know, great organizations, they're like, who needs this nonsense? I'm just going to stick and do my thing in the private sector because this whole system is totally a joke. So you wind up with defective human beings running for office. And then we all act surprised when we get screwed up policies coming from them.
Yeah. And they can't care too much about even their own future with what they're doing. You know, they keep, you know, yelling about climate change. Oh, we got to do something about climate change. Mm-hmm. But they are destroying the planet. They're putting up 5G. They've been geoengineering for years. You know, it's out in the open now. Nobody can deny that they're spraying crap in the air, and oh, they yeah. have been for years. They're destroying the food. They're destroying our food sources with GMOs. The insects have declined by over 75% in the last 25 years. If we don't have insects, we don't have anything. We're all going to die. Yeah. And they just keep pushing, oh, it's climate change. Meanwhile, they're rolling out 5G, which they have no idea what the effects are because they're not testing it because right. they want to have it out so fast. Mm-hmm. So they really don't care about their own future. So, you know, it's really bleak outlook for what we have to look forward to coming up in the next 5-10 years.
Yeah. They're parasites. You know, they live off of everybody else, and they have the inability to sort of project long term. Cause like you said, if they really cared about any of this stuff, I feel like sometimes I want to say, like, you guys have to live on this planet too. You know, unless there's something we don't know, that'd be a different show. They would definitely get demonetized about what planets there may or may not be going to. But I mean, like, as far as I know, this is the only planet that we have. We all have to be here. So, like, why are you guys doing all this stuff? Why are you allowing this to happen? I mean, I understand you're taking, like, campaign contributions, but it's like Senator Pan in California, who's pushing the vaccine things. I mean, he's the cheapest whore around. They only gave him $86,000 for his campaign. So he's willing to screw up the lives of who knows how many kids and force vaccinations on people for $86,000 of campaign finance money, which you have to spend on advertising and things like that's the worst deal ever, but that's what you get when you get it. So who's, you know, somebody like Richard Pan wants to run for office because he's, you know, got a huge ego and wants to tell people what to do. But 5G, yeah, the global warming cry is just, it's just like nonsense. It's just, it doesn't, it is, first of all, it's a carbon tax scam. I mean, and second of all, if anyone has read the Club of Rome's document that came out in 1971, they laid it out in there. Club of Rome was started by Alexander King, who is a founder of the Tavistock Institute, and David Rockefeller. So two of the least trustworthy people in the world. But in the Club of Rome, their document stated that the threat of a climate change or global warming would fit the bill as a concocted disaster used to tax countries according to their carbon footprint. So it's like, well, who did that really well? Well, Enron did that. If you remember what Enron was doing, is they were selling bogus tax carbon credits as well. And who is Ken Lay, the CEO of Enron, who died? Ken Lay's best buddy is Al Gore. So who taught Al Gore the carbon tax hustle? Ken Lay from Enron did. And Al Gore has then taken that on. Now, I want to be crystal clear about something whenever I go on the carbon or the global warming thing. And that is to say that I believe we are polluting our world with trash and emissions and, you know, all the what we're putting in the water and dumping in rivers and all of that is, we're destroying the planet. But that is not climate change. They have hijacked that term. They have taken all the negative things from pollution and hijacked that term and called it climate, actually global warming. But then the temperatures went down, so they had to change the name because global warming doesn't work. So they picked the Orwellian doublespeak term climate change, which is perfect because the climate's always changing. So they've hijacked that and used that as the excuse to sell carbon credits throughout the world, being run by the IMF and the World Bank, which takes us right back to the John Perkins book about how they were running scams on all these countries. And this is just the same thing. It is a carbon tax scam based on bullshit science that they have concocted. And they don't care about saving the planet at all. They care about finding, they have found a way to create tax you on the air. It is genius, actually. You have to give them credit for being such psychopathic geniuses that they've come up with the idea. They probably were sitting around in a Bilderberg meeting and say, it'd be great if we could tax everybody on air. And then some guy goes, I think I know how to do that. I think we can do that. We can work that out. So they'll create a multi-trillion dollar carbon tax credit system based on the global warming. They're going to use that to fuel this new building boom, which will cause more money to be borrowed by the banks, the central banks that they own. It's just a big, gigantic scam. We should be focusing on cleaning the planet of this, not buying tax credits or letting these maniacs at the World Bank run anything. They have proven that they are not on your side. They are out for themselves. They're not some charity organization. They're run by the Rockefellers, for God's sake.
Well, whether you believe it or not, they use geoengineering. They control the weather. I mean, they can control the weather basically anywhere now to push any agenda they want. So, you know, if they want a drought, they can have a drought. It's climate change.
And they own the Weather Channel, so they control the news about the weather, which is exactly what you would do. If you controlled the weather, then you'd want to buy the news channel that talks about the weather, so you could control that and get your story straight. So you're absolutely right.
And, you know, there's other theories that there could possibly be larger things happening to the planet, you know, outside cosmic things, yeah. You know, possibly a solar minimum could be affecting cosmic rays. We are going through a magnetic reversal that has huge effects on our planet. Mm-hmm. Our magnetosphere is weakened to the point of almost nothing. I mean, they don't talk about these possible cyclical cataclysms that the Earth goes through every 10, 20,000 years that we may possibly be coming up against. But it's another thing, you know, to hide the narrative on that, because, of course, they wouldn't want anybody to know that the world's about to be reset either. You know, they want to keep complete control in every way possible.
They want to keep control of the news that's coming in the future, and they also want to keep control of the news that happened in the past. And so I went a couple weeks ago and saw Graham Hancock when he was when he came through town here in Denver. Went to hear him speak about his book America Before, and that goes into finding evidence that there were people living in North and South America as long as 125,000 years ago. So that's evidence that is not appreciated by the establishment archaeology and science community. And, you know, they treat Graham like shit, or they did with Fingerprints of the Gods. And when that came out, and then what do you know? It's proven years later to have been true. I think everybody's kind of established that, yes, you know, two comet fragments hit, 11,000 and 12,000 years ago. So, you know, people have come on board, and now he's doing the same thing. So you're talking about them controlling the weather and controlling the news and controlling the news about events that are coming. And I say that they're definitely doing that as they desperately try to hang on to the control they had of the past. But you get guys like Graham Hancock digging around in there, you know, not trying to be difficult, just trying to get to the truth, which is, you know, should be the stated goal of all these archaeologists and scientists that find themselves defending it, you know, to the end until they finally have to give up on it. So, you know, even the science is corrupted, you know, and I suppose I could understand how that would happen. If you've come up with this discovery or you've been put in charge of this discovery, you tend to, you know, your job is to protect it and defend it. But if it's wrong, shouldn't you have an obligation to be a part of changing that then, if you, to get it right in the end? But I think a lot of scientists get bogged down with, I can't do that. I have a Zahi Hawass in Egypt was like that. He was unwilling to change anything when they brought him, when, you know, Robert Schoch and those guys showed evidence of the weathering on the Sphinx that was from water erosion that made it 5,000 years older than they had said. Well, he just said, get out of here. You know, he wasn't having any of that. And, I think there's, you know, people get sort of married to their ideas of what their version of the past is, and they don't want to change it. I suppose I can understand why they wouldn't want to change it, but I'm more of the mindset of, you know, if something in my book is wrong, I hope I find out that it's wrong and I acknowledge that. And, you know, I don't know that I would correct it because it's already out there, but not try to defend it if I find out that it's wrong. There's definitely going to be things in there that are wrong. We're up against world-class disinformation agents, you know, that are out there spreading tons of lies connected to other lies. So you're going to get some things wrong. But I mean, the reaction of some people to stand and defend it, even when it's incorrect, is puzzling. So to hear Graham Hancock go on and show this presentation for 2 hours made me think about what you were saying, how they'll just fight to defend their version of events, even if it's filled with lies and holes.
Right. Yeah. I've got Brian Forrester coming on in a couple of weeks.
Oh, cool.
I have like 2 pages of questions for the guy. Yeah. I feel sorry for him after the interview.
He's cool. I saw him at, he was at an Acapulco when I spoke there this year. So, I think he's written a book with Graham as well. They're like, to me, they're like neck and neck. They're like Indiana Jones, you know,
number
two and number three, right? So they're out there just getting into mysteries and trying to solve puzzles and try and figure out what happened. And thank God there's guys like them doing that, because I find their work to be fascinating. And actually, I got to say, I find your work to be fascinating too. On those, I've got to ask you, since I've got you here, what is it that is parked next to the sun? What are those things? What is going on there?
Fascinating. I mean, there's objects that you can't see. It's debris. It's too symmetrical. It's too enormous. I mean, they're the shape of, some of them look like insects, but some of them look like massive ships. And it's hard to deny it, but, you know, you can't confirm it either. But it's really fascinating, and there seems to be an uptick of that. And that brings me to actually what I want to talk about next is this whole disclosure thing going on. It's got the community excited. It's got everybody kind of, you know, like, oh, what's going on here? But I got a bad feeling. I think it may be some more disinformation. I think it's steering people in the wrong direction, possibly for something huge and fake and very malevolent coming up in our near future.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't have a good feeling about it. I was listening to Jimmy Church earlier. He was talking to Stephen Greer, and they're so excited about these leaks coming out. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm pretty skeptical. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm with you on that. I want disclosure. I believe that there is life outside of our planet beyond ours. I don't have any evidence to that. It's just, it's a belief, and maybe I could be wrong about that, but I want disclosure. This has been my feeling of this. I want disclosure, but not like this. I don't trust those guys at all. Elizondo, once CIA, always CIA. Tom DeLonge is, unfortunately for him,
I used to listen to Tom DeLonge when I was a teenager, when he was in that dang punk rock band. I mean, I don't know. I can't take him seriously for some reason.
I can't either, but it's okay. I mean, I think that he means well, but he is playing the role of useful idiot in this. I'm disappointed in the group that they put together. It's all ex spooks that you can't trust. And you've got guys involved like, John Podesta. I mean, is there a less trustworthy person than John Podesta?
Just has scumbag all over him. Scumbag psychopath.
Yeah. And then you remember Hillary Clinton was on Jimmy Kimmel and she said UAP, right? That's what we unidentified. That's what we call him now. And so I was like, okay, you're involved in this, and your campaign manager, who is guilty of having questionable taste in artwork, among other things. Yeah. If you guys are involved in anything, it's a scam, it's a fraud, it's all those things. I think, the blue chicken cult stuff, Corey Good,
right,
and Jordan Sather and those guys, they're embarrassing themselves.
Really,
they
are.
They
have to be part of this narrative in some way.
I mean,
they can't gain this much popularity and notoriety. I mean, you know, they're making money off of this stuff.
Yeah. You know what? So with the UFO stories, There's one that I always remember that I really liked and believed, and that was the Gary McKinnon story out of the UK. For those that don't know, he hacked into NASA is a bit of an overstatement, because he just logged in to NASA using like admin as the password, and he got in. So this was 1998 and 99 and 2000, I think. So it was a while ago. And anyway, he found a list of non-terrestrial officers, and he found a list of fleet to fleet transfers from ships that were named. One of them was the USS Roscoe Hill and Copper. So it was like spaceships, you know, and he was trying to figure out, are these spaceships, is off-world things? And so that was his story. He got busted by NASA after a couple years of doing this. He told that story, and that's what it was. It never changed. It never got more. It never got less. There was an end to it. He said, I tried to pull these images down low modem speed, so it took forever. They finally kicked me out, but this is what I saw. He never embellished it. He never added to it and never changed it. Corey Good and those guys, their story just keeps going on and on and on and on. And it's like, at some point you have to say, that's all I've got, man. I've told you everything I know. I don't have anything else to say, but they don't have, no finish line.
Funny enough, I've had some pretty big names on my show, and those are pretty much the only guys that will not respond to my emails. It's Corey Good, David Wilcock, Emery Smith, those cats there, they will not get back to me at all, because I would ask them some tough questions.
Yeah, of course. And as you should, anybody that is telling that story deserves to be held down, waterboarded, and interrogated. You know what I mean? If you really have that information, I want to know everything about it. And you should want to tell, if you're going to tell the story, tell it all. Don't hold back. Don't say, oh, I don't want to answer those questions. That makes you look guilty as hell. I mean, you should be able to tell this. If it really happened, you should be able to tell the story front to back to front, cut in between, and get a police interrogator in there and say, you want to sell this bullshit story to everybody? We're going to put you on a lie detector, and then I'm going to have some of the best lip readers, and I'm going to have guys come in there and just pick you apart and see if they can find out whether you're telling the truth or not. And if it really happened, you should say, when can we do it? Let's film it. I want everybody to see this, because I've got so. I think those guys are full of shit.
They're harming this movement more than they're
for sure. They are. And that's disrespectful, because this is I don't have a dog in this UFO fight. I don't know what I want to be the outcome. I just know that I want the truth, and I don't know that that is reasonable to hope for. I'm gonna say that I'm optimistic that we can get the truth, but I'm not gonna hold my breath. I don't see the harm in this information coming out. I know it would destroy religion, probably, or they say it would destroy religion, but it might not. It might strengthen people's bonds. So and frankly, I don't think it's anybody's right to tell us that we're not allowed to know the truth about these things. If we've got off-world entities coming and going from here, let's talk about it. I want to know. Let's get this stuff out in the open and not, have the government treat us like we're children. Like, no, it's okay. We need to know about this. And, there's a lot of people that have done amazing work on this subject, and they get ridiculed, or they get no thanks, no respect by the mainstream. Not that you necessarily would even want the respect of the mainstream, but still, they're still sort of shunned, and that's a shame. We're at this point in our history, we deserve the truth. It would probably clear up a lot of answers to why the world works the way it works if we were able to find out what was truly going on. I don't know the answers, so you probably have a better idea based on the people that you've talked to, but I'm just as lost as you.
I mean, the more questions I have about it all.
Yeah. I do know a guy. So I'll tell you a funny, a weird story. It's not a firsthand story, but it's the true story that I was told. So back in like 95, I had some photos taken by this professional photographer. A guy owned a small studio outside of LA. And he was a cool guy. He kind of looked like Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead. And he was maybe in his 50s, you know, kind of long gray hair. And so the first time I went in there and met him, we got along really well. We took these pictures, and then afterwards we were chatting, and he said, "Oh, I got this crazy phone call. I got this gig in. I got a phone call from this guy who's an Air Force officer asking me if I want to do a photography job for the Air Force." And he was like, "Well, what does it mean? What do you have? Well, we're going to take you to this base and have you shoot some film there, Area 51." And he's like, "So I guess I'm going to Area 51. And I said, "Can I ask you a simple question?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, doesn't the Air Force, no offense, but doesn't the Air Force have photographers? Like, why do they need to hire you?" He's like, "I'm thinking the same thing. I don't know." He's like, "But hey, they're paying well, so I'm going." I'm like, "Well, cool, man. Have fun. And you know, let me know how it goes." So he goes off. And you know, I call about 2 weeks later to see if my pictures are done. I call him and he says, "Oh yeah, they're done. Come on down." I said, "Oh, it's yeah. Okay. I'll be down there in 2 hours. Oh, by the way, how is that thing in the Air Force?" He goes, "I can't talk about that." Click, and hung up. And I was like, "Well, okay, well," so I go down there, I get my pictures, and I start talking to his wife, and I said, "Hey, what's the deal with him?" I called him and asked him how his trip went, and he hung up on me. She goes, "He's all freaked out. He's all freaked out." And I'm like, "Well, why?" She goes, he saw something that he doesn't think he was supposed to see. And now he's convinced that they're going to kill him. And I was like, "What the fuck?" So I finally get a hold of him. I'm like, "Tell me what is going on." And he goes, "Well, we can't talk here," because he was convinced his place was bugged, and it probably was. So he proceeds to tell me that when he went to Area 51, he was the photographer. He had a camera and he had a guard next to him the whole time. When he was done with his role, what he was shooting, he had to hand the camera to the guard. The guard would open it up, take the film out, because this was back in 95 or 96, load the new film in, hand him his camera. So he was never allowed to touch the film. So that was part of the deal. I was like, "Okay, so why are you so freaked out?" And he said, "Well, he went into this hangar, and the biggest hangar he'd ever seen in his life, it opened up and they pushed this thing out that was on wheels. They rolled it out." And he said it was about the size of a Volkswagen Bug. And then he said, "You ever go to the carnival and see gyroscopes? You know, you get in it, pay $2, get in this thing, and it goes over like this, and then another circle. Like, if you've seen the movie Contact, that thing where it's spinning like that." So he says, "There's this thing about the size of a Volkswagen Bug, and they push it out so that it's outside of the hangar and out onto the tarmac. And then there's a guy controlling it in a scissor lift type thing, and he's got these joysticks." And so they flip it on, and the thing just starts spinning like that. And then the little arm drops down so that there's nothing holding it. He said, and it just lifted off the ground and just in a hover and started spinning faster and faster, but it wasn't making any noises. And then all of a sudden he said, it just went boom and it was gone. He looked, he couldn't see it anywhere. And then wow. Said a mile away, you see it boom, boom, you know, plop up there. And he turns to me and he goes, "And that's the moment I thought they were going to kill me." I was like, "Oh my God." So that is not me. I wasn't there to see it. So it's a secondhand story, but it was from a guy that was a photographer. He wasn't trying to sell the story. It was just a casual conversation. I have no reason to think that he didn't actually see it. His reaction, his reaction of being legitimately freaked out was very real. And in the juxtaposition between the first time I met him when he was just like, "Hey, what's going on?" And then the second time I met him when he was just terrified, made me think that it was true. So that's my only UFO story that I have. And it's not even a UFO.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool though.
And I think that is what he said, that I do remember him saying that they called it the acorn, and I'd never heard that before, but now I see that in some scientific things. I think it was similar to the Der Glocken, right? The Nazi bell. From according to his descriptions, it was something similar to that. So very weird.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine the advanced technologies that they're hiding from us. It, you know, that's a whole different show. Got just a few minutes left. Just give us your take. Are we going to become basically like China, social credit dystopian society? Or do we have a chance of making it out of this and becoming somewhat of a, I don't want to say free country because it never really was, but what's something of what we used to resemble?
I think that we are on our way to being that China social credit system. But the one thing that I think gives us a chance is that just culturally, we're so opposed to being grouped together. We like to think of ourselves as like tough individuals standing up for what's right. And I think that China has a more of a culture of just being massive populations, just a swarm of people, a mob of people, and sort of almost like a blob. I've been to China a couple times. It's very different. It's a very unique place. I feel like maybe culturally they're more inclined to accept that, whereas the United States is more culturally inclined to fight something like that. Although the one caveat to that is that we have been so dumbed down, and no doubt, you know, it's hard for a lot of people to recognize what's coming, even when it's right in front of their face. But the social credit system in China obviously is a test run there. Because if it works well, then you know they're going to want to export that to every other country and have, you know, and have the same control system. So I'm not optimistic in a sense that I think that that is probably the plan, but where I do have a little bit of optimism is that I think that as a society, we would probably tell them to stick it. I hope that there are enough people still awake to realize what a bad idea that social credit system is. I mean, they could, if you have a bad score and you get a bad score by putting Facebook videos up or YouTube videos up that's pointing out obvious lies about the government, just plain flat out lies, and you get your credit score taken down, according to the system in China, you can't even get on an airplane. You know, and so how do you do your job? Well, I got to do my job. I'm a traveling salesperson. I got to do my job. So I won't post that video. So then it becomes self-censorship. And then it's less overt and has this really like East Germany type of chilling effect on people. They just are afraid to say anything for fear that their rights, which are just privileges at this point, will be taken away, like their ability to leave the country. I mean, they're talking about, you know, if you owe back taxes, that they'll put a hold on your passport so that you can't. That's coming like within a couple of years. That's been discussed quite a bit. So that's one step in it. That's a form of social credit ranking, right? You're ranked as somebody that doesn't pay their taxes. That's the bottom of the barrel. Therefore, you can't get your passport, so you can't leave. That's Orwellian big time, you know. And that's the beginning. That's becoming culturally acceptable. So it'll be incremental. You know, this social credit system thing won't just come all at once. They'll do it in a way that'll make it not seem so overt, and then they'll also use a ton of predictive programming to make you demand it at some point.
Right. Well, I mean, we're living in fascinating, terrifying, amazing times. And Charlie, I want to thank you again for coming on. I'm going to have you back on because we're going to have to keep discussing this as everything keeps unfolding. You know, we got to, you know, keep in touch. We got to keep connected with everybody. Yeah.
If we don't have to keep in touch anymore, that'd be a good thing. That would mean that we've solved all the world's problems. But until then, I'll see you. I'll see you the next time around. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again, Charles. You have a great night.
You too.